Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Superhuman Riley.
Ooh, I like that moniker.
And also...
I already know what moniker you're going to give me, probably.
Spencer.
Super duper human.
Mm-hmm. Super strong.
Oh,
Williams.
Oh, okay. Save some face, huh? What's up?
Well, at least I didn't say something like Dark Knight or something.
Nah, well, that's what I was expecting from you.
We got a great show in store for you as we're going to be talking about the recently released Glass, brought to you by M. Night Shyamalan. So we're going to get into that conversation, talk a bit about it, and let you know our thoughts. But before we do, Chad, give him them opening credits.
If I must.
You must.
There's an unbreakable bond between the Filmlosophers and our distinguished sponsors. When you get a chance, go check out Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios, would ya? Like Wednesday mornings at your favorite comic book store, we always have something new for you to check out. New episodes of the Filmlosophers also hit the cyber shelves each Wednesday morning on the world's most prestigious streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, where else can people find us?
Don't keep the voices in your head. Take the light and join in our conversation on social media.
That's cryptic.
You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. We don't have an Instagram account because we're not that photogenic, and we don't take the time to make it look like we are. That's why we stick with vocals only. From origin stories to epic rivalries, our digital archive is bursting with options for you to explore. Visit filmlosophers.com to relive the wonder of every episode we've published to date. You may even discover something new you've never heard before.
That's right. We got 144 episodes of loveliness for you, so you can check it out and enjoy them eps.
Nay, sir, we have 145.
Well, now we do.
No, now we have 146.
Keep
146.
Up that numbering system.
Speaking of numbering
system. It's a lot of hands to count on. I get it.
It is. There's plenty of them. But speaking of hands to count on, we got a chance to go get our hands on an opportunity to go see Glass.
I see what you did there.
Thank you. The film, part of the trilogy that M. Night Shyamalan brought to the silver screen, finally hit the conclusion with its third film, debuting this past weekend. So before we jump into that, Chad, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Sure. Following the conclusion of 2000's Unbreakable and more recently 2016's Split, Glass finds David Dunn pursuing Kevin Wendell Crumb's superhuman figure, the Beast, in a series of escalating encounters, while the shadowy presence of Elijah Price emerges as an orchestrator who holds secrets critical to both men.
Directed by M. Night Shyamalan, the film stars Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson, Spencer Treat Clark, and Charlaine Woodard reprising their unbreakable roles, while James McAvoy and Anna Taylor-Joy return as their split characters with Sarah Paulson, Adam David Thompson, and Luke Kirby. Glass is the first ever film co-production between Universal Studios and Disney Pictures, which have been heated rivals in both the film and theme park businesses for more than half a century. So, obviously, if you're unaware, Unbreakable was put out by Universal, and then, I'm sorry, Unbreakable was put out by Disney's counter company, or a co-company, Buena Vista, and this previous film, Split, was brought by Universal. So, creating this collaboration, if you will, of these two companies was actually a pretty interesting feat in itself. So, seeing them work together to create this third film, it's got its, you know, a little bit of a parallel, I guess, if you will, with the way this film worked out as well. So, just a thought.
Are you saying there were too many cooks in the kitchen?
There were way too many cooks in the kitchen. Director M. Night Shyamalan said that the original cut of the film had a runtime of nearly 3.5 hours. He trimmed it up a bit, he said, by cutting three of Kevin Crumb's 23 personalities out of the film. So if you got a chance to see the actual film, 2016 film Split, James McAvoy does a pretty incredible job of showcasing a lot of those personalities. You don't actually get a chance to see all 23, but there's a pretty cool, there's an idea behind it. Apparently at some point in time, Shyamalan decided he wanted to showcase all 23 of them, and that didn't come to pass, so he had to cut three of them out, which shaved off about an hour time from the film.
Which begs the question, what in the world more could there have been to say?
Well, I think the bigger question is, what more is there that James McAvoy should have showed us? Like, I think he was a great performer in Split, and his role carried over, I think, in this film. And so,
hey, I think by a mile, he's the one who saves this whole franchise, personally.
Writer and director M. Night Shyamalan drew inspiration from the following comic books for the film. You have Saga, Forbidden Brides of the Faceless Slaves in the Secret House of the Knight of Dread Desire.
Of course you do.
Sandcastle, Paper Girls, Day Tripper, and Last Look. So if you've seen throughout these films, there's a really strong running thread of comic books or inspiration by comic books, comic book heroes, mythos, so forth. So with this particular film carrying that, we actually got a chance to see these types of inspiration from...
Which is interesting because I've read a couple of these series before, and I can't say that I see it, but obviously I'm just now seeing these notes. So maybe if I decided to watch the movie again, then maybe I would see some of those influences. But yeah, I can't say that they're very face forward. The ones that I know. I've read much of Saga and a smattering of Day Tripper. That really long one that you said second, I it's probably all from that, and I've never even heard of it.
So, like we said, we got a chance to check out the film this past weekend, and actually opening night, to be honest. We went opening night on a Thursday and got a chance to get our butts in the seats to check out this film because, in all honesty, Split was a really good movie. It was one of his better films. It was one of those movies where after the visit that he did prior, there had been talks that M. Night Shyamalan had been coming back to the forefront and becoming the director that we remember from Sixth Sense and other films that he had done where he was successful. So with Split being widely successful throughout the world, we were kind of anxious to see how Glass was going to come about because I think me and Chad have spoken about this at length. Unbreakable is one of his better films after Sixth Sense. Yeah. Sorry. So,
absolutely. And we actually gave Split a very favorable review, less than 47, for those of you keeping score at home. So roughly 100 episodes ago.
That's true.
Like one third of the way down the road to where we are now. How cool is that? But we both really liked it. And were very pleasantly surprised because M. Night Shyamalan is one of those hit or miss directors.
Yeah.
Right? Like
mostly missing.
Lately. Mostly missing. I mean, it's very similar to like a Michael Bay, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things with M. Night Shyamalan where he just hit that top of the fame, you know, mountain really quick with Sixth Sense. And it's just been like, okay, he was immediately put on this pedestal and recognized as this prolific director from only one film, and then everything else since then has been referenced back to his success with Sixth Sense. And from there forward, you could actually say it's kind of been unfair, but I don't know. I think...
Well, I mean, it's like any performer or band, and we've talked about this before, yeah. Right? You come out with an incredible debut record, and then your sophomore album maybe isn't as good because you set the bar really high. And maybe the third one's not as good, but the fourth album suddenly hits again, you know, because you do have actual talent, there's actual skill, and you're likable, you just don't always bottle the lightning.
Exactly.
And I think that here in this case, I mean, The Sixth Sense was like Twilight Zone as a movie, right? Like it was total, what is it, Rod Sterling?
Rod Sterling.
You know, where it's like, you got that really great twist. Some people saw it coming. Some people didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was just satisfying. It was really satisfying to hit that part of the film.
Yeah.
And then you've got to redo that. And yeah. meaningful, unexpected twists are really difficult to pull off, especially when people know to look out for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and if you look at his filmography, I mean, in all honesty, he hasn't had the greatest of opportunities to meet that bar when it comes to certain films he's put out. Because right after Sixth Sense, obviously, he did films such as Signs, which was okay, but not a lot of people liked it. You had Unbreakable, actually, which is immediately after Sixth Sense, which was a great film. But then after Signs, you got things like The Village and Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
Lady in the Water.
I was, you know, Paul Giamatti, I'm a huge fan of, but he, not one of his finer roles.
It was awful.
And then he hit the horrible trio, if you will, with The Happening,
yeah,
The Last Airbender, and then After Earth.
Oh, gosh.
So
After Earth is one of the worst movies I've ever suffered through. Because I despise that movie so much.
We were forced to watch it. We were forced to watch
it. It's true.
We were we were guilted into watching that.
No.
A flaming sword was placed against my neck.
How were you forced to watch this film? Who had this flaming sword?
A dear, dear friend who leveraged her friendship in order to get us into the theater with her. And there was an entire row, like 12 of us or
there
something.
Was.
And we all had quite the experience.
Sounds like she might have been a financier on this movie.
Possibly.
All I remember is Chad said, it was a Sunday afternoon, and Chad goes, "We have to go to the movies." I'm like, "Oh, okay, what do we watch?" "We have to go to the movies." I'm like, oh, okay. And then he told me the story, and I'm like, oh, we have to go to the movies.
Yeah, literally, friendship was on the line, and it's a friendship I take very seriously, and this movie was not the thing to leverage against the friendship. After Earth, not Glass, but yeah, it just painful, so bad.
It was really bad. And so after those three films, I mean, when it comes to M. Night Shyamalan, that's kind of the 1-2-3, you know, out kind of knockout type of thing that you would expect from a director. I mean, maybe he'll go on to help, you know, present, or he'll be a part of in terms of as a producer.
Do an anthology series on FX or something.
Yeah. But then he kind of slipped off the earth and didn't really show up until a few years later to do The Visit, which was his comeback film. A lot of people were dismissive of it because of the fact that it was him. Mm-hmm. It was his name. Before I kind of go into his comeback, though, I do want to say, out of these three films, I think there was somebody here at this table who had the most egregious reaction to...
Out of these three films.
Out of the three...
Unbreakable, Split, and Glass.
I apologize. Out of the horrible trio. His downfall. And that is... Mr. Williams here, mm-hmm. who actually thoroughly enjoyed The Last Airbender, apparently.
What? No. I thought it was hilarious to laugh at. But The Last Airbender, I remember before any real details had come out about the movie, I was kind of excited. I was like, because I am a big fan of the cartoon show that was on Nickelodeon. It was really well done and it was pretty fantastic. So I was looking forward to, like, you know, live action movie.
Like you can't miss, right?
Yeah.
It was so good, you can't miss.
Like, it seemed like it'd be, like, fairly easy to do it justice. The first thing I heard about it was, M. Night Shyamalan's directing it. And from there, I was like, ooh, this is not going to work out well.
It's kind of like hearing Michael Bay's directing it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Again, though, for different reasons.
And then, like... it got out that he was like, I'm going to condense 26 episodes into 2 hours. And I was like, you're never going to do that. I could not do that in 2 hours. There's no way you're that good of a writer, especially when the last couple of movies you released were like Devil or something and then something else.
Hey.
Oh, now you're stepping on toes.
Hold up. Now.
Hay is for horses.
And cows eat it too. The thing is this. Devil, he was a producer on. I actually liked Devil.
But so the problem with that movie...
I actually own it.
...is that the devil did it, like, the whole time. Like,
yeah. It's a good movie. It's a good movie. Have you seen it? No, but... the thing is this, is that for you, Spencer, The last Airbender film was the final nail in the coffin. It wasn't like After Earth, like what me and Chad had experienced.
I saw a clip from After Earth of Will Smith's acting with quotation marks.
Ooh.
And I was like, well, I'm not shocked or surprised.
And that was the best part of the movie.
He was, technically, because Jaden Smith was horrendous. The worst. Yeah, atrocious.
I've heard some of his voices.
He was like Anakin Skywalker on crack. Oof. He was just bad.
Oof. Did he have like...
You couldn't understand
it. You're weak. I'm not weak. And just that's all crack.
Did he have his own like sand speech? Like, but like equivalent speech?
Essentially, yeah. His dad was his sand. So, like, his dad was this super awesome general in
yeah, Cypher Rage.
Yeah. the 6-year-old gamer tag name. And he couldn't live up to it because he was always afraid. Yes. His son. Yeah. So, yeah, it was horrible. But needless to say, those were essentially the three films that kind of began the downfall, if you will, of M. Night Shyamalan. And then you got The Visit, and then after The Visit, you got Glass. Or, I'm sorry, you got Split, sorry, because the one we just saw. Yeah. You got Split, which for us was the bigger turning point, because I hadn't really seen The Visit fully, but we, myself and Chad, went to go see Split to review it for the podcast. With hesitation, because we were extremely unsure.
I mean, who wouldn't be hesitant?
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm. We were extremely unsure of how the film was going to go because of our last experience. And needless to say, like Chad mentioned, we gave it a good review because we actually thoroughly enjoyed it.
And the fact that it connected to Unbreakable, because we saw it in advanced screening, mm-hmm. that was new information. Like it really was a reveal. It wasn't, you know, already in the press or anything by the time we saw it, because we are the press. So... It was really cool when you get to the end of Split and you've got a cameo from Bruce Willis as David Dunn.
Which, mind you, at our screening, there was either information or a clip at the beginning mentioning to not reveal the ending of the film in any type of news, even after the film debuts, let people find out for themselves, which was pretty epic because if you're having...
And I'm all on board with that kind of stuff. Like, if it's supposed to be a reveal and it actually pays off and means something, mm-hmm. keep it a reveal. Don't spoil the secret.
Now, me and Chad saw that around, like he said, less than 47, which is about a year... Oh, year and 2016, a half. So about a year and a half. However, Spencer Williams here saw Split how long ago?
Like yesterday.
Yesterday, the first time. Now, here's the bigger question. When did we see Glass?
We saw it last week.
So Spencer kind of got the rotation a little off in terms of what order we were supposed to
see
it.
I think you did it right.
Yeah.
I mean, not to spoil the review, but you saw it in ascending order of quality.
Yeah, that means I get
these
the
two,
most...
I still do like Unbreakable.
Yes.
Yeah, so I still stand by my decision because, like...
You don't have much of a choice. You don't have a DeLorean to go back in time and see it beforehand.
No, I thought about watching it beforehand. And I'm like, because I at the time when Split came out, I was like, oh, this looks interesting. Oh, M. Night Shyamalan, no, thank you. I was not giving that man any more of my money to make horrible, horrible movies. Like, I couldn't do it. I decided not to see it, and then once we were going to review Glass, I was like, should I watch this? And I was like, nah, I'm just going to see it. And then I can at least give a review from the perspective of someone who may have also not have seen Split because of M. Night Shyamalan's name being attached to it.
So because of the fact that you had to watch it for the episode, that was the only reason why you went to go see Glass?
Yes.
Outside of the podcast,
I probably wouldn't have seen either of these movies.
That's good to know. But seeing as you saw it so fresh, did your perspective of Glass change once you saw Split?
No, actually, I think Glass does a pretty good job of either, like, you know, not making you feel lost if you didn't see Split.
Yeah.
Or at least, like, coasting over things to where, like, if people are talking about something, you know it's from that movie. And that's where you're missing information.
Gotcha.
Not that you miss something in the movie you're already watching and you just didn't miss, like, you missed it or something.
Hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Not bad. So jumping right in, talking about expectations, obviously, like we said, we had a chance to see Split a couple years back. For me personally, the biggest expectation I had coming into the film was hoping to see the big showdown that they were teasing in the trailer. So you have this individual at the end of Split, David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, who is this powerhouse of a man. He's just this strong, resilient type who survived this horrific train accident and was the sole survivor of it. And so you know what he's capable of. And after seeing Split, you see what the Beast is capable of. I was hoping to see, you know, these two massive powerhouses come to blows. That was my biggest expectation. I wanted to see them do this proper. Like, I didn't want it to be like, okay, we're just going to put them in a room and they're going to stare each other down and then it's going to be something totally mental. Like, oh, it turns into a battle of the minds or something. Like, because it's M. Night Shyamalan, you never know. You know, it's a twist kind of thing. So,
kind of, but at the same time, I think there's definitely a whiff of false promise in this whole mix, because the scene at the end of Split where David Dunn sees a news story about, you know, what this individual has done and kidnapping the teenage girls and
yeah.
there's murder involved and then one of the girls escapes and all that, but he sees it and you're like, you're immediately, I feel like you were promised. We were promised like a battle royale kind of showdown mm-hmm. between these two guys, because David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, has supernatural abilities, superhuman mm-hmm. abilities. And clearly, the personality of the Beast, there is a physiological change that happens in the body of Kevin Wendell Crumb.
Yeah.
When the Beast has the light, is the way that they talk about it, right? Like where the Beast is in control of the body.
Yes.
Is the personality at the forefront. There's a change. Like, he gets bigger, he gets ripped, he gets stronger, he gets more bloodthirsty, and you're like, oh, okay, so they're both superhuman. Who would win in that fight? And they're both like totally set in their trajectory, right? They have diametrically opposed viewpoints,
yes, and completely,
and reasons for doing whatever they're going to do. So I think that you were promised. I think that we as an audience were promised that there was going to be a big fight. And well, we won't spoil too much, but I think that there was a lack of follow through on that promise.
True.
Holistically, by the time you get to the end of the movie, not that it never happens, but it's not what I was expecting.
No doubt it, and that's, per my perspective, like, I was really hoping to see that promise fulfilled, you know, come to fruition. Alongside that, I was hoping to see the same care and just effort that was put into both Unbreakable and Split's storyline. Not just the action, not just the visuals, but the story of it
yeah.
into this film as well. Because looking at all the other films, you saw where they went from Unbreakable to the horrible trio that we talked about, and then they M. Night Shyamalan jumped back into The Visit and Split. So there's kind of like a timing. Split was great, but it didn't solidify me in the fact that I was like, okay, I have no worries anymore about M. Night Shyamalan's writing. It was good, but I didn't have enough to be that certain yet. So this was one of those types of movies that was coming out that I'm like, this needs to be good writing in order for me to not be worried about an M. Night Shyamalan film anymore.
Well, so, and let's be fair, for Split, one of the things that really worked was they cast two incredibly compelling leads.
Oh, no doubt.
James McAvoy and Anya Taylor-Joy were really good in that movie,
mm-hmm.
respectively.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty much those were my biggest expectations. What about you, Chad?
Yeah, I grew up reading comic books. I wanted the knockdown, drag out fight. I wanted to see how to do it differently, because the other thing that's true about this movie is it's not named after either of those characters. It's
no.
named after Samuel L. Jackson's like persona, Mr. Glass, and he's the mastermind behind everything. And I wanted something honestly, in retrospect, I wanted something different than I got. Mm-hmm. And I can't say exactly, like, specific definition of what I wanted, but by the end of this film, I was like, yeah, that just, it didn't do it for me. This was not what I wanted as the capstone of the trilogy.
Yeah. Spence, what were you expecting, seeing as you're, you know, with the amount of how much hurt and pain that M. Night Shyamalan did to you?
Yeah, so the last Shyamalan movie I've seen before this is The Last Airbender. So I was expecting to be disappointed. I wasn't sure how greatly disappointed I would be, and was shocked when I was not disappointed. Like, I was like, oh, this is okay. So, like, I was actually like, this is, like, really good for him. I'm impressed.
This is really good for him.
Like, when you go from, like, the terrible one straight to this, like, it's kind of, like, a step up. But if you're watching in chronological order, you can see how, I could see how it's a step down.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, jumping right into the film. Obviously, like we mentioned, you're reintroduced to a lot of characters that you've known before. Bruce Willis's David Dunn, that character. James McAvoy's Kevin Wendell Crumb's character as the multi-personality individual. The person who
say there are numerous characters all wrapped up in that one.
True. The individual with DID, which
yeah,
it doesn't explain in Glass, but thankfully because we saw Split yesterday with Spencer. I remembered the name of that. Is it a disorder?
Dissociative identity disorder.
It is a disorder. Okay. Yeah. So Kevin Wendell Crumb, who suffers from that. And we're reintroduced to Elijah Price, played by Samuel L. Jackson, who is...
I mean, kind of.
You see him. You see...
I we'll get into it. Kind of.
Also, we're introduced to Sarah Paulson's character, who plays the doctor who is brought in to help with the individuals in the Dr. Ellie Stapler, who is brought in to help figure out a way to help these individuals who think they're superhuman or of super extraordinary abilities and whatnot. We're also reintroduced to Anya Taylor-Joy's character, Casey, whom, if you remember, she was the main protagonist in Split, and Spencer Tree Clark, which he plays David's son from the first film. It's really cool to say, just a side note, that they actually use the same kid from the very first film back in the year 2000 to reprise his role in this recent film.
That was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I was looking at him like
he's now an adult.
Yeah. And I honestly looked at it. I was like, okay, who'd they bring back? Who is this guy? And I look, I'm like, he looks like a lot like the guy from the kids from the first one. And I'm like, wait, it is him. Cool. And it was a really good, like, refreshing feel. Like, oh, we're giving these people opportunities. And who knows what else not.
Yeah, well, and it's really refreshing. This is a total side note. But because there was already so much inherent conflict within the story, they didn't have to do one of those gimmicky things where it's like, and the father and son don't see eye to eye and they're fighting with each other. Like, they're actually on the same team the whole time,
yeah,
which is fantastic because you don't often see that. I think a lot of times filmmakers think that you have to strain the parent-child relationship in order for a story to be interesting. Mm-hmm. But because you've got, you know, all of these characters with different motives, that would have been extra, and they avoided it, and I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked that component of the story a lot.
It was very Oracle Batman-esque.
Very Oracle Batman.
So I really got a kick out of that part. And also, you were introduced to Samuel L. Jackson's Elijah Price, his mother, who played the role of his mom in the first film, Charlaine Woodard, which is interesting because... the woman who plays the mom, Samuel L. Jackson, is actually 5 years older than she is.
See, they're like, I was looking at them together during this movie, and I was like, "I'm. This is the one thing in the movie that's bothering me.
It don't make no sense.
It does
people.
Not.
It don't make no sense."
But going back to the character, so it's odd. It's kind of interesting to see how this film progresses into the meeting of the three, because it does take a while to get to that point. You're introduced to Kevin and his personas early on, because what you see in the trailer is actually the situation that is happening at the beginning of the film.
Right. Yeah, he's taken more girls captive and trying to summon the beast.
Yes. And you have David, who is perusing the nights, the streets at night, as the character of, what do they call
him? The overseer.
The overseer. He has a name now in his green trench coat.
He's been dubbed the overseer by the public.
Which this
although
public
he's had
has
numerous
names.
Names, like they reference the fact that they've called him different things because he doesn't have an official name.
Yeah.
And so overseer is the most recent option that people are using.
What were you saying, Spence?
I was just saying the public in this universe has just terrible names for all of their heroes and villains.
Well, I mean, technically, Elijah Price gave himself his own name.
And he's part of the public.
Oh, well.
I think he would disagree with you on that.
Yeah, he probably
I
would.
Think he holds himself apart.
Well, that name does not really.
Agreed.
Within the first 20 minutes of the film, we get, well, not even 20, more like 10, we get the first directorial cameo,
oh,
if you
yeah,
will.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, he's in here.
Which he reprises his role that links from not only Unbreakable, but also from Split. Because he mentions, he remembers David when he was working at the football stadium. And he also, before he mentions that, he also states that a tenant in his apartment building recently passed away off-site, which references the doctor from Split. So mentioning that kind of helps tie the universe together. So just another way for M.
So
Night Shyamalan.
Clever.
No, just
M. Night.
No, just another way for him to say, I am the center of my universe. So it is. But aside from that, you get the opportunity, the introduction of meeting Sarah Paulson's character. She is the doctor that we mentioned. And I have to say, Sarah Paulson scares me. I don't know why, but just the way her face kind of always seems to look like a doll's face.
Yeah, in this film in particular, they really do the whole like porcelain doll kind of thing.
Yeah, and it kind of creeped me out. Like,
it's creepy. I'll give you that.
I got like really weird vibes the moment I saw her on screen. So I was already off put by her early on. Like every piece of information that she knew about everybody before you realized who she was. Like she's over here saying, oh, David, your son, blah, 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 and this, where this, and your blood type is this, and I know your shoe size is that. Like, she was naming things. She didn't say those things specifically.
Yes, I know.
But she said these things, and I'm like, oh, how does she, why does she know?
Yeah, I mean, she's unnaturally calm, poised, well-coiffed, and over-informed out of nowhere.
See, that really just irritated me whenever she was on screen, because I'm like, I don't know who you're with, because if you're with like some sort of government agency, you are not being paid well enough to like be that up to date on everyone and what they're doing. Like, we underfund so many things. Like, I don't think so.
We're in a shutdown, lady. You're not even supposed to be working. But we're introduced to her and her wanting to bring these three individuals into this study so that she could see if there is a reason or a purpose as to why they feel like they're superhuman or they're superheroes or they're extraordinary or however whatnot, and kind of bring to light that they're not really. They're just, they think it's all in their mind, that there are things.
Yeah, she has essentially like a ticking clock. She's got 3 days to recalibrate their brains, which to me sounds like the most far-fetched part of the entire setup. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why, what have you, I mean, because at first you believe, I mean, I'm not giving away too much of the game, but like at first you believe that she is who she says she is, that she is a psychologist of some sort, And no psychologist in their right mind would agree to transform somebody's entire self-image mm-hmm. in 3 days.
See, that's why I thought she was lying from the get-go, because I was like, that just seems so outlandish that I don't really believe that that's what she's actually trying to do.
Well, and so like high-profile individuals such as Elijah Price, who had orchestrated the mass murder of several different individuals in 3 different accidents, and the individual who has been known to kidnap girls and mutilate them and practically eat them. And
yeah,
then you have David Dunn.
Yeah.
The man who goes who around and
beats up bad guys at night, kind of like Batman.
Like, you have these three really interesting and probably well known because of their feats and whatnot individuals, and you're going to give this woman 3 days to figure out like what's wrong in their head. That just kind of seemed a little hokey to me. Like, yeah. Like, in all honesty, it would have taken maybe at least a week just to get intake and go through like the preliminary just information of them, because M. Night Shyamalan tries to pull certain parts of his movies like from actual reality, like real world situations. I would have figured they would have given them a little bit more time, but I don't know. It just seemed really like the first red flag, if you will, of the film. Like, oh, so we're going to have her work with these three people, and then we're going to put them all in a silo of 3 days, the time frame of 3 days, where everything's going to happen in these 3 days.
Contrived. The word is contrived.
Yes, very much so. And I think that kind of goes to talking about how the way this film kind of feels, I honestly have to say it's very different from Split. And it's
very different. And it's Split.
It's even more so different than Unbreakable, because, and I don't mean that as in an obvious way. I mean, like, I was hoping there was going to be some type of semblance of any of those first two films to kind of go with how this film was going to work. Like, mm-hmm. you were going to see maybe even like some of the scenes with David and what he's doing kind of seem reminiscent in the first film, like the way the first film was done, which, mind you, the way the first film is done, it's very beautiful, it's very self-realizing. There's every scene that's in it is David realizing how superhuman he is and coming to that like conclusion that he is not like everybody else. And then you get Split is just this chaotic, beautiful orchestra of music and personas. And then you get this one, and this one, I think the hardest thing for me in this one is how much it struggled to figure out what it was trying to say as a overall message, just aesthetically.
Here's what the problem is.
Oh, wait.
And M. Night, you can be upset with me for pointing it out this way and being overly simplifying, you know, your story or whatever, but when you have an interesting main character, you need to create a foil to that main character. In this case, your title character is a mastermind. So your knee-jerk reaction is, well, then the foil to that character needs to be a shrink. Like, literally, this movie is primarily like an hour and 15 minutes all through the middle of Outthink the Shrink.
Yeah.
And you've got a split personality guy as sort of comedic relief, sort of.
Essentially.
And then you've got David Dunn, Bruce Willis's character, as your straight man, who, mm-hmm. like, this actually, this whole scenario doesn't really make much sense for him. Like, it doesn't really, it's not, these are not at all, any of the three of them, all that similar, aside from the base perception that they are different from the norm.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, they're motivations and their actions are very different. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that when you meet him, and for the first like half of when he's in the movie, Elijah Price, Mr. Glass, Samuel L. Jackson, mm-hmm. is catatonic.
Yeah.
Or at least pretending to be. So it makes for an exceptionally boring flow, actually, of the story. I mean, we had what I would characterize as one of the most disruptive and uncomfortable audience experiences at our show. And I have to say, I can't entirely blame the guy that was being an idiot. I mean, he was like belligerently yelling at the screen for 40 minutes?
Give or take.
To try to get to the point that you saw in the trailer with the three of them, you know, in a room with the shrink. And then to still be disappointed that you're still not going to see the fight that you want to see. There's mm-hmm. still going to be all this talking. That's not the movie that most of us paid money to go see.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's good on its own, it really, I think if you're trying to be very accommodating, friendly, and complimentary, you'd say, well, it subverts your expectations because blah, 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 blah. No, it bores you. It bores you with talking. Like it does. Is outthink the shrink.
Yeah.
But then you're dealing with, like, in a way, what's maddening about it, if I watered it down, if I whittled it down to one element, it's that Sarah Paulson's character is the main character of this movie. Yeah. And nobody knows why. There's no excuse for it. No. Not that she's a bad actor, not that she does poorly in the performance. I think it's kind of a so-so kind of role.
It's pretty one note.
But I signed up to see those two guys fight and Samuel L. Jackson be a freaking mastermind.
Yeah.
And yet here I am with you, porcelain doll, pseudo-psychologist, weird person, as my main character for reasons unknown, and you're not that interesting.
See, watching this film, like I thought that, like, you know, Mr. Glass was going to be like the main character of the movie called Glass.
But I don't know why you'd think that. That's preposterous. How dare you?
Yeah, so silly me. I thought it was going to be more of, you know, Mr. Glass, like, trying to outsmart people thinking they're getting in his way, but not really. And then, like, there's going to somehow be a showdown with the guy from Split and then Bruce Willis. That's not what this movie is, but, like, it's just so weird that there's so little of Samuel Jackson in, like, the first 40-ish minutes of this.
Hour.
Yeah.
When you count his catatonic time, it's 2/3 of the movie. He kind of sort of starts coming alive in the third act.
Yeah.
Which is
far too
very
late.
Disappointing for a yeah. movie that's named after his character. And furthermore, as they're making the transition between seemingly catatonic Elijah Price and, like, actually kind of sort of pretending to be smart Elijah Price, they turn him into, like, the little, like, leprechaun gremlin kind of thing. Like, he's not even all that intelligent. And the things that he's doing that are supposed to be, like, wildly manipulative and whatever, you don't see him doing them. So it's like, I don't actually believe that he, like, it's hard to believe, like, okay, what did you exactly do? Because you don't get to see it. Like,
yeah.
And to that point, I think that it's one of those, like, I would be frightened. I would be intimidated to write a character who is supposed to be the smartest guy on earth.
Yeah.
Period. I would be very intimidated to do that because that means that I need to be a smart person
to create the
to
character.
Show how intelligent he is or she is.
Yes.
And I think that whomever was involved in writing this movie, M. Night and compatriots mm-hmm. and the producers and Disney and Universal and everybody, they weren't smart enough to write a character like him. And they took some shortcuts, especially near the end. They took a lot of shortcuts. And it's played off as a reveal and, like, oh, there's the twist that we were waiting for. But it's not all that twisty.
It isn't.
And it's kind of ambiguous. It's sort of like, oh, mercy, I can't believe I'm saying this. Batman versus Superman.
What?
Dawn of Justice. Lex Luthor, again, supposed to be the smartest guy on Earth. The only way that his plan works is through a contrived matrix of, like, because the story says so. Like, there's nothing that actually unifies the plan or makes any, like, mastermind level sense. It's all kind of stupid. And in this case, I don't think necessarily that Elijah's plan is entirely stupid. However, if this is the plan that he had in mind X number of years ago, because you find out that his history with some of this goes way further back than you ever thought before.
Yeah.
Like, how he would have started back then and to now, and he would see that the pieces would converge, that doesn't make any sense. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
But here we are.
And it's true. It's the way the film finally reveals who Elijah, what he's been doing. Honestly, in that reveal, I would have been fine if it had been much more of an intelligent reveal. But I've never, at any point in time during the course of the Unbreakable film, do I ever remember Elijah being hands-on in terms of like using a gun or cutting people or whatever. And your first moment of realizing he is aware, he cut somebody's throat. And that was, for me, kind of like that tip of like, all right, something's not right, because he's not a very agile person. He's Mr. Glass. He's somebody who, if he moves too quickly, he'll break something. And the fact that when he finally makes his big moment, he cuts somebody's neck.
With what?
With a piece of glass.
What?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
Genius.
That was kind of like another red flag for his particular character, because he's not known for being agile. He's not known for being quick. He's been in a wheelchair for this entire time, unless when the lights go completely dead and he found a corner somewhere and he's doing push-ups or he's doing some type of weight training or whatnot. There's no way that would make sense for him to do. And then you come to the realization, oh, he's been doing all this and this and this and this while in the chair. He's been doing these things. And it's like, yeah, but this information would have been great about 20 minutes earlier. But instead, you added a lot more pieces in the center of the film.
20 minutes. Try 20 years. How long has this genius been waiting for this all to come together?
Like 18 years.
It really doesn't make... Like, I fully acknowledge I am not smart enough to write a character like this well. But clearly the people who wrote this movie are also not smart enough to write a character like this. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Kidding me.
One more time?
Kidding me.
Okay. And speaking of the writer, obviously this goes back to the director-writer M. Night Shyamalan and what we have come to know with previous works, like we mentioned earlier, with whether it's the massive success with Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, or the horrible box office blunders with The Last Avatar or The Happening. It's one of those things where I think there was just way too much hype for this movie.
I think they rushed it.
Oh, I completely agree. I think they really did rush it.
They way rushed it out. I mean, it's been a year and a half since Split. Split was very good,
mm-hmm.
unexpectedly so.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, we can't like not follow it up immediately. We got to do this.
We can't sit on this. We need to.
Strike whilst the iron is hot. And it's like, not if you're going to write something stupid. You didn't even have like a creepy psychological thriller in this one. You literally had, most of the time, one person sitting on one side of a room and Sarah Paulson on another side of a room talking.
Yeah.
Like it was a therapy session that didn't make any sense.
No.
Like that's most of the film. Or she has all three of them sitting in a room together and none of them do anything, right? She has all of them in check because she's so well prepared. Whatever. Yeah. Like, can you hear my eyes rolling? They're rolling all over the place.
They are rolling all the way down the hill and on their way to M. Night Shyamalan's house. But it's sad to say that with the massive amount of success that Split had, I'm going to be honest. I really thought this was going to be okay. I was really hoping this film was going to be worth watching. And sadly, aside from the gentleman who would not close his mouth for a good portion of the movie,
who ultimately ended up leaving halfway through.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Because I was about to throw Spence at him. It was one.
I would have let him throw me.
It was so bad. Side note: if you've ever wanted to see me in the truest test of patience, this was one of those moments where I'm like, it's late. There are things that are happening in life that I just don't want to have become to the surface. I am doing so well right now. Please don't let me lose it on some idiot in a movie that I'm not even enjoying.
You know, I don't know what's.
I love the way you ended that.
You want to know what's really weird for me, though? is that, like, even though he was annoying, like, the distracting thing for me in this movie was you, because, like, I could, like, just feel your energy around the...
I was seething.
Yeah, you.
I was
you
trading words with the guy at one point. Oh, yeah. I don't blame you. He was obnoxious.
I was...
That's not even the right word. He was, like, way beyond obnoxious. Belligerently. And everyone in the theater was trying to get him to stop.
Yeah. Even the people that were next to him.
Especially the people next to him.
Yeah. So, that was fun. Thank you, doctor, for being a great therapist. But here's
the thing, though. Yeah. I can't totally blame him.
I was just going to say.
I still will.
Like, I mean, I don't care. You need to have decorum and all of that. Like, you need to be a decent human being and not ruin other people's experience of a movie. But I understand his frustration.
True.
He didn't channel it well.
No.
But I understand his frustration.
I agree. I think there was a point in this film where you began to see the film rolling in circles. Like, the film was just going around
treading
and around.
Water.
Just really.
Like, literally, like, Bruce Willis's weakness is water, right? Mm-hmm. Like, David Dunn's weakness is water. Yeah. It's literally treading water.
Yeah, treading water and flashing lights. That's all I remember from this film. And it just goes around and around. It's a dog chasing his tail for a good 45 minutes. And you're like, okay, this whole entire part of the film could be completely removed, and it may be a better film. But the fact that we have to wait so long to get to the point where we realize Elijah Price has actually really been aware this entire time. He hasn't been taking his meds. He's actually been concocting and planning and doing all these other things.
Literally, you, like, basically, you can almost hear him, like, like, in the background. Like, yeah. It really doesn't suit the character.
No.
At all, but that's what they choose to do with him.
And it's a sad trope because it's been done before. There was a film with Paul Newman who he did the same thing. He played this old bank robber who plays – he's like catatonic in this chair. He's been sitting in this chair for God knows how long. And the nurse is like trying to figure out a way to get him to come out because she thinks he's actually been really – it's been done before. And the problem is that it doesn't work for Samuel L. Jackson. He is not a visual person. Like, you don't watch the film to just see him stand there. You listen to him speak. You see him act. He's a very animated performer. This was not one of his better performances, seeing him sit in a chair looking like how he'll probably look in about 20 years. I don't know. But, yeah, with his eye twitching and whatever else. Like, and even then, like, those were horrible twitches. Like, I'm like, I was literally in the theater practicing, like, can I do that? Yeah, I could do that.
That's not good that you were practicing during this movie.
There was nothing else happening.
It was so slow.
It was either I practiced the twitch or I yelled at the guy behind us. What was it? So I was kind of caught in between a rock and a hard place. But all in all, I think this film really does falter when it comes to showcasing what its talent can do. Unlike the ability of utilizing James McAvoy to its fullest extent. So underutilizing Samuel L. Jackson and then underutilizing James McAvoy in, as Chad had mentioned earlier, in more of a comedic performance as opposed to being this unique and complex character of Kevin Wendell Crumb and all 23 of his personas. 24 if you include the Beast. But,
yeah, I he gets short shrift. I mean, I would say David Dunn, Bruce Willis's character, probably has the most complete story arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe that's because he's been the protagonist for the longest in terms of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, James McAvoy's variety show of characters, they do have an arc in this movie that continues the arc from Split. But I felt like it was less satisfying by the time the movie was over because especially by the end, you start – essentially you get this like flood of the personas all grabbing for the light to come to the forefront. Like you literally – you've seen McAvoy do, I don't know, 10 of them or so for the first – 8/10 of the movie, and then in the last 2/10 of the movie, the last fifth of the movie, you get a few more, and then suddenly you have like all of them vying for attention, mm-hmm. one after the other, after the other, after the other. And he goes through, I don't know, like 13 or 14
yeah.
in one take. You're watching him do it.
Oh, yeah.
Which kudos to him, hats off to him to pull mm-hmm. something like that off.
That's pretty great.
It really, it's sort of like by that point, you're like, well, I mean, again, hats off to you, but too little, too late. This is not, I know what you're doing in this moment, but at the same time, this would have been really interesting earlier when we were mm-hmm. kind of just sitting here twiddling our thumbs, staring at paint dry.
Yeah. Cool thing to note, Samuel L. Jackson actually said of working with James McAvoy on the film, he said, as good as I like to think I am or what I do or how I do it, watching somebody transform characters in front of your eyes and have an argument with four different people is pretty amazing. And it's true because mm-hmm. you see James McAvoy just really, I mean, he did incredible in Split, but to see that consistency is probably what I'm thinking of. Consistently showcase the way he transitions from role to role, character to character, so seamless. Mm-hmm. It was one of the things, and I was mentioning this to Spencer earlier after we finished watching Split, was that was one of the most impactful and unique performances in, honestly, M. Night Shyamalan's entire filmography.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, I think he does astounding work. And seeing him come back into Glass and seeing him be able to still do that, but in all honesty, it not being showcased properly throughout the entire film. Like,
mm-hmm. I want to know, Spencer, you are our resident, like, I didn't see the second movie before the third movie. How did it feel for you in Glass?
Oh, so like
seeing how he does the different personas.
Yeah, I only like knew like he had different personas, not like he was like changing through them that rapidly. Mm-hmm. So like when you see him just like morph and morph, I was like, this is phenomenal. Because like each personality is so distinctive that you can mm-hmm. just pick up on it. And like in Split, it's even better because like sometimes the personalities don't say anything, but you know who it is just by the way they're carrying themselves. And I'm like, I have never seen anything like this. So I was really impressed after just seeing Glass by itself with James McAvoy and like his ability to just perform and act. And that's kind of what made me want to see Split so much.
Yeah.
And it's true. Come a long way since his Mr. Tumnus days.
I was just going to say he's no
Mr. Tumnus
in the first yeah. Chronicles of Narnia.
He's Mr. Tumnus. Okay.
Did not know that.
See?
The things you learn. But it's sad to say that although he is without a doubt probably the star performer, standout performer of Glass, it really isn't enough for me to look at it and say he carries the whole film. Mm. Unfortunately for me, I think there are parts of the film where when they do utilize him, it's good and it's great, but it's too far and few between, and it's a lot of going back to seeing Samuel L. Jackson in a catatonic state. And I was like, I wanted to see more of his reemergence of like not just the Beast, but also several of the other personas and how like they may connect with David or how like I wanted to see more of that come to fruition. I wanted to see more of him and all his personas connect with the people that are there instead of it just being a focus of, well, Elijah just is focused on meeting with the Beast and that's what we're going to push for. And that's kind of the end game. So I think going to what Chad mentioned earlier, I really do feel, I have to agree, I feel like it was rushed. It was one of those movies, this was one of those instances where this could have had much more potential. In all honesty, it could have been a two-parter. But
in all honesty, Split could have been a trilogy all on its own.
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt. Just keeping it within that universe, so to speak.
Yeah, before expanding back out, you know, I mean, I loved having Bruce Willis back as David mm-hmm. Dunn. I have enjoyed that movie for many, many years. But yeah, I think his arc is overall satisfying. Samuel L. Jackson, I would be annoyed if I were him that mm. this is what you gave me. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Like it's not good enough.
No.
For the kind of character you've set him up to be. And I think James McAvoy, I mean, he chews up every scene that he's in, usually like three or four different times because he's playing three or four different personas all in a single scene. Like the changes, the transitions are much more rapid here than they were in Split. But then you have such a desire because some of the personas are sympathetic, like protagonist sort of personas, and others are antagonistic. And you want to see like restoration or some sort of, you want to see an entire arc for him. Either he fully becomes the Beast or he fully rediscovers himself as Kevin Wendell Crumb.
Yeah.
And I think they have some beautiful moments stuck in the mess that is the middle of this movie. Beautiful moments with Casey when they let her go and see him.
Yeah.
And she interacts and like because of what she experienced as his captive, and her experience with the different personas.
Yeah.
She's uniquely equipped to kind of, in a way, solve the problem that is Kevin Wendell Crumb at all, right? But they don't let her do enough.
No.
She's not she's not literally a psychologist, but they don't let her do enough. The other person, spoiler alert, isn't really a psychologist. And, like, it's just a hodgepodge. And so by the time you get to the conclusion of his arc at the end of the film, you know, yeah, there's a lot of flash and sizzle to it because he's performing his butt off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, without a doubt.
But it still isn't very satisfying. It's like, wait, he deserved, as a character and a performer, he deserved better than what he got.
Yeah.
In terms of wrapping things up in a bow by the end of the movie.
Yeah. So wrapping things up in terms of wrapping up, kind of going around the table, we've stated a lot of issues and whatnot. Is there any other last thoughts, any other last highlights, maybe issues with the film that we want to speak up before we go to our thoughts on passing or failing? Spencer.
I guess just the mystery surrounding the therapist. Like, just for a long time, you know something's up, and it's just kind of hanging there for a little too long with not enough backstory either. Like, it's really weird because, like, she's just like, this is who we are. And it's like, you guys just, like, I don't want to get into spoilers, but I'm like, why are you all so synchronized with each other? That's kind of weird.
Right.
I didn't get super that at odd. All. Like, it was odd.
Super odd.
So, like, I don't understand what she and her, how are they even on to this?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense where she's coming from for me.
Chet?
For realsies. I enjoyed James McAvoy in this movie. I wanted more of what that character and that performer could do.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, there is a little kernel of a thing that sort of happens near the end. They use the word very specifically, origin, and an indication of like something else that is originating by the end of this story. Mm-hmm. And on the surface, you know what that is. I won't give it away, but I could have used a little bit more of that. If that's your end goal, if that's the end game, is yet another origin of some sort.
Yeah.
Then, like, let us see that. Like, stop promising stuff, not delivering, and then, like, ... other promise. Like, that's not the way to close a trilogy.
No.
If this was the second movie, fine. The way that they ended Split, brilliant. Mm-hmm. David Dunn sees the news story, and now he's involved. Brilliant. ... promise. But if you're closing out the trilogy and you end with a ... promise, I don't know where it would go from here.
Yeah.
As someone who saw the order of this film as 1, 3, and 2, I do have to agree with your assessment. Like, it was much better the way I saw it with having Split as the capper to this, even though that doesn't quite work.
It kind of reminds me of how Kin came about. In terms of, like, we had that promise of, like, oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. And then you watch it and you're like, wait, no. And then at the end of the film, there's this promise of something more. And you're like, wait, No. No, you can't hook me like that. What's wrong with you?
Or the one that I really enjoyed laughing at the end of many years ago in the cinema, in the theater, The Golden Compass.
Oh,
like the
Golden Compass
wastes 2 hours of time setting up a story that you're like, oh, they're just now getting started, and then the credits roll. Literally, it just stops, and you're like, okay, that was not very artfully done.
That's sadly, side note, I think a friend of ours went to the theater to go see The Lord of the Rings, the first one, and I believe she got pretty upset the way the first Lord of the Rings ended, to the point to where she got up and started yelling at the screen.
I can see that. But stuff happens in the Fellowship of the Ring.
True. Like, very true.
There's a key character dies at the end of it, before they continue the saga. I mean, there's a lot of, like, it definitely works as the first part of a bigger story.
Yeah.
The Golden Compass, like, two polar bears fight an hour and 45 minutes into the thing. You've got all this setup and exposition that doesn't even matter. Two polar bears fight, and then everybody gets on a flying boat, and then the credits roll, and you're like, oh, well, but the story was just getting started, wasn't it? Like,
Spence, they're fighting over a Coke.
The Fellowship of the Ring got to that point in like half an hour or 40 minutes. You took 2 hours and 15 minutes to get there. Not cool, Golden Compass. And here too, you've got like, oh, wait, was this like the re-beginning of a different kind of story? Why did you waste so much time getting there?
And then, boop, boop, boop.
And then here you've got credits rolling.
So, wrapping this up, let's go ahead and go around the table. Start with, I'll start actually. The film passes for me solely based on the fact that it does conclude the trilogy. It doesn't wrap it up as neat as I thought it would, but it does bring conclusion, you know, and resolution to this story. Sadly, not in the way I thought, but technically it does. In terms of monocles, I am going to give it a 3 out of 5, just because all three of them are literally pretty much the three favorite personas of James McAvoy's character. So, including...
I'm like, which three are you going to pick then?
I'm going to pick Patricia.
Patricia, she's of course, the high priestess of the cult.
Kevin Wendell Crumb, which is the actual person.
That's an interesting pick because he doesn't get a lot of screen time in this movie.
But the way he wraps up towards the tail end, the way his story goes through for the film, I got to give it to him for that. And then, of course, Hedwig. I absolutely adore Hedwig. So yeah, it's going to be 3 out of 5 for me, and it passes. Spence, what about you?
Yeah, this movie passes. It's good if you haven't seen Split. It's okay if you have, to like middling. Yeah, that's how I'm gonna.
I love that assessment.
That's a very astute assessment. I'll take that. There you go.
I did have fun, especially with James McAvoy. Oh gosh, just so great. Like, I'm just blown away by everything that came out of his mouth. Other than that, I'm like, meh, to this whole movie. So I'm going to give it like 2.5. Because like, it's kind of really like, really, seriously though, like, if you're going to name your movie Glass, you can't just have him show up in the last bit. Like, this is not how this should have happened at all.
There you go. Chad.
I'm going to side with Spencer on this one. I'm going to pass this by the skin of its teeth. And it's brittle little broken forearms and shins.
Wow. That's very...
That's very Glass.
That is very Glass.
But because I agree, you can't name the movie Glass and then like just totally waste the unrealized potential of the title character.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think they did. I don't think by the end of it... I mean, you kind of have this like... glimmer in the eye of like, oh wow, that was your plan the whole time? Oh, well, aren't you smart? No! This movie is dumb. It's not smart enough to have a smart character like him. James McAvoy
I love where this
totally owns it. I really enjoyed seeing David Dunn more extended form. Again, not just a cameo in the end of Split, but he carries a lot of the movie. because he's the most relatable of all of them. It was nice seeing his son again, full grown, yes. Same actor. I thought Anya Taylor-Joy once again did a great job with what she was given. I wish they would have given her more. If they did for some reason decide to continue the story and do some sort of a spinoff, I'd watch her again. You know, they don't really suggest that she's a superhuman, but I found her very compelling second time around after Split. But yeah, I would give it 2.5 because I wanted it to be more. There's a lot to appreciate in the movie, but there's also a lot that just really didn't make sense. Mm. Like, not that you can't understand it, but it's like, why did you choose to tell this culminating story this way? Yeah. It just falls flat for me. So 2.5, 50%.
There you go. Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can let us know your thoughts on the film. Did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think Spencer needs a really cool superhero name? Let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Before we go, we want to let you know about a couple of upcoming weekend releases. You got The Kid Who Would Be King. I know Chad's pretty anxious to see that one coming out. So we shall probably have to...
I love me a good King Arthur story.
Well, yeah, a good one.
I know. There's a caveat built into that comment. I know.
And 2019's Serenity, not to be confused with the Firefly film Serenity. This one stars Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. So get out to your local theaters.
Interstellar Part 2.
True. I didn't even think of that. But let us know your thoughts, and of course, check out all of our previous episodes at our website at filmlosophers.com. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.